Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Marking Time, Art in the Age of Mass Incarceration is the name of Professor Nicole Fleetwood's third book and her first foray as a guest curator for MoMA PS1. The book is a culmination of a decade of research and collaboration with artists, some of whom have been incarcerated, some of whom haven't, some of whom still are in a state of unfreedom, as Professor Fleetwood describes it. The book and the show explore how art offers a window into a world where there are no windows, how art changes those who make it and those who see it, and how revolutionary an act it is to make art while incarcerated. The show features 44 artists' work, and it was scheduled to debut last spring at MoMA PS1, which of course couldn't happen, but it officially opened this month to glowing reviews. Holland Carter of the New York Times described the show as stirring, and it's a critic's pick. Time Out New York listed it as one of the best art exhibits of New York right now, and ArtNet calling Marking Time, Art in the Age of Mass Incarceration one of the 25 must-see shows across the entire United States. Joining us now is Nicole Fleetwood. Nicole is an associate professor in the Department of American Studies at Rutgers University and graduate faculty in the Department of Women and Gender Studies. She received her PhD from Stanford University in the program in Modern Thought and Literature, which I point out because this work gives you a lot to think about. Nicole, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm a fan of your show.
Oh, thanks so much. You are candid enough, you know, even though you're professional and academic, you write in the book that you were really a little bit worried about tackling a project on visuality in prison because it might be emotionally quite challenging. What changed your mind?
So I kept coming back to some images that I had in my house of my incarcerated relatives, and I realized that I was uncomfortable with those images and that I first had to work that out myself. I had to work out the kind of shame and stigma that I felt as someone who comes from a really hyper-incarcerated working poor community in Southwest Ohio. So the project actually started with me hanging up a series of photographs of my imprisoned relatives around my house. And it grew from my apartment to now being at PS1.
Was it emotionally challenging in the beginning?
It was incredibly challenging in the beginning. I started to talk about these images of my imprisoned relatives and the artwork that I'd see hanging off in the visiting room of prisons to like university audiences or to museums or whenever I was invited to give a talk. I started to do this work about 9 or 10 years ago. And Allison, it was amazing to see how often I would kind of break down and the people in the audience would break down. And what would happen afterwards is that people would come up to me and say, you know, I have an incarcerated relative or I've been in prison or I have some art by people in prison. And that's literally how the project grew over a decade.
Yeah, you let us know in the book right away that there are currently approximately 2 million people who are incarcerated and that incarceration has reshaped your family and your hometown in Southwest Ohio. So from those experiences in writing this book, you have to balance the academic with what you know in like your heart and in your bones. How did you find that balance?
I love this question, and I love that you also do your 60-second meditation, because meditation actually became a big part of this project for me about like just being really present for what was happening. And I think it was through growing community. And so in order for me to grow community and be present for this project, I had to wear multiple hats. It wasn't just being an art historian or a scholar of American studies, but it was also being someone who's been had my entire intimate life restructured by the power of prisons and the power of criminalization. So I had to bring myself, all of myself, fully forward to make this project possible.
My guest is Professor Nicole Fleetwood. We're talking about Marking Time, Art in the Age of Mass Incarceration. So you have been describing in community and in collaboration, you spoke to, I think it was about 70 artists to talk about their work. What did those who were still incarcerated want to know from you about the project before they got involved?
Well, I really like that question. And it's so interesting. As I started reaching out and meeting people who were formerly in prison and people who are currently in prison, There was a common request, and it was to be, one, it was to be in dialogue, and it was, mm-hmm. two, to like have the work recognized for its artistry and not as just like about the conditions of prison or someone being in prison. I actually did an interview with a group of people who are in prison in Northeast Ohio. They were interviewing me for a media production course that they were doing inside prison. And the question was, how can we be more in dialogue with the public? You know, how can we break down these walls so that we're more in dialogue and that people understand that we are people just like people who are not in prison? And I think that's been the recurring request and the recurring desire. And for me in this project, I wanted it to be, if more than anything, I wanted it to be like a deep process of recognition, of recognizing people for their complex humanity, for their talents, and also for... you know, everyone's ability to change and to, mm-hmm. also everyone's ability to be like caught in their very worst moments.
So you have to go in, even though you know, you feel it, it's part of you. You can sympathize, empathize, understand, but you do have to ask questions. You have to get information. You have to do your research. What was it you wanted to know from the artist you spoke to?
I wanted to know what it takes to make art in prison, what it takes to make art when you are living in a 6-foot by 9-foot cell, when you're under constant surveillance, when your experience of time is as punishment. Everything you do when you're in prison is a measurement of your time as punishment. So taking a shower, eating, waking up, that's all a measurement of punishment. And that is such a like profound existential experience, and I wanted to know how that shaped people's creativity. And I think the most exciting part for me was like the kind of like the material experimentation that took place, because mm-hmm. there's not an art supply store that most imprisoned people can just walk to and get a set of supplies. So people are constantly innovating. They're taking items that they, you know, discarded items and making incredible works. They're finding contraband. They're using organic matter. One of the artists in the show, Todd Tarselli, who's currently in prison, he collects leaves off of the prison yard and does incredible oil paintings on these leaves. Or Jesse Crimes, who's formerly incarcerated, has this enormous 15-foot by 40-foot mural that is comprised of 39 prison bed sheets. He made this work over 3 years. We have miniatures by Dean Gillespie, who's this incredible artist. Mm-hmm. He was in for 20 years and created the incredible miniatures of like Americana from like all types of found items, including like foil from cigarette wrappers, used tea bags, cassette tape, plastic materials, and the like.
My guest is Nicole Fleetwood. We're talking about marking time in the age art in the age of mass incarceration, both the show at MoMA PS1, which is open until April 2021, as well as the book that she's written. You said this in one of your interviews I watched, everyone in the book taught me something. What's an example of
Absolutely.
Something that you never knew going into this subject that you learned?
Well, I think the thing that was like most profound for me is the way that art can be this incredible facilitator. So there was mm-hmm. incredible relationships that were created across racial and ethnic differences inside prison. And prisons are pretty racially stratified. And in part, it's a way that prison administration maintains, quote, order by keeping people racially segregated. But art became this like really incredible sanctioned space where people across racial and ethnic lines would collaborate together. They would resource pool. There was like tons of peer mentorship taking place. There's like a really vibrant, informal art school happening in a lot of prisons across the country. And that blew my mind. And also how rigorous it is. Like it's mm-hmm. not, and you know, there's a lot of critique and there's like very intense, harsh critique. And there's a lot of time that people have to critique the works too. So there's a lot of humor and, you know, and just a competition, like friendly, healthy competition where people are growing inside prison and they're envisioning. One of the collectives I featured was out of Ferreton Prison in New Jersey, and it was Gilberto Rivera, Jared Owens, and Jesse Crimes. They're all out now. They're multiracial group. But they were in-prison planning, like, you know, when we get out, we're going to have a big show. We're going to have a gallery. We're going to have, you know, and much of this has manifested itself over the past few years. So they were really planning their futures. And I think the art becomes a way for people who've been being punished and being condemned and labeled, quote, bad citizens, to really envision a future and to like literally create their mm-hmm. future. And one that resists the kind of mandate of prisons to punish.
It's interesting. Yeah, the art sort of creates a power shift, a sort of shift in the power dynamic in some ways. When because art is something, and your artistic talent, even if you're given a number, or even if you're told to do X, Y, Z, nobody can really take that from you. It's one of the few things that someone can't take from you is your talent.
Absolutely. And in fact, many of the artists would use their label as, quote, felon, offender, you know, all of these kind of pejorative terms that the prisons place upon them. They would use that in the service of art making. Like Russell Craig actually uses his prison documents and make incredible portraits on top of his prison documents. And then another artist, Ojuri Lutalo, who was part of the Black Liberation Army, he uses all of his prison records to create these political collages about imprisoned radicals throughout the past three decades. You know, so the materials of the state, the punitive materials of the state, actually get used, repurposed to make art for a lot of people in prison.
There's this sort of trope of like art is therapy, as healing, but that's not really what this is about. This work is more of artists expressing themselves and their experience. Why is it important to make that distinction? And can you give us a good example?
I really appreciate that question, because there is this like a long tradition of therapeutic programs in prisons, and I'm in no way interested in like criticizing or putting mm-hmm. those programs down, but I wanted to approach it from like more my training as a scholar of American studies and art history, and to think about how often when we think about art coming out of prisons, we think about categories like outsider art or folk art, but they're marginalized from established art institutions. And I really wanted to place the work happening inside contemporary prisons at the center of contemporary art practices, largely because we have over 2 million people in prison. And people in prison are, one of the things they do is that they create and they innovate, because there's so many material constraints. So some mm-hmm. people who didn't consider themselves artists before they went in, they become accomplished artists inside, in part to manage that time, as a way of like creating a relationship with oneself. I mean, art is so deeply personal and also deeply universal, right? So it's like it resonates in a spiritual way with people individually, but it connects people to all kinds of other communities. And for me, it's been one of the biggest rewards of this project has been the way it's connected the artists in the show with communities internationally. We have people like writing from Japan, people from Spain, South Africa, who are like really connecting with many of the issues and struggles that these artists experience.
My guest, Nicole Fleetwood. She is the guest curator of a new exhibit at MoMA PS1 called Marking Time, Art in the Age of Mass Incarceration. It's the name of her book as well. We'll continue our conversation after the break. This is All of It. We're back with Nicole Fleetwood, author and professor of American Studies and Art History at Rutgers University. We're talking to her about her new work. It's a book called Marking Time, Art in the Age of Mass Incarceration. It is also a show at MoMA PS1 featuring 44 artists' work. I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, since we've been talking about this as a friend of mine put it, art with a capital A, you know, art. What is the role of portraiture for artists who are incarcerated or working with themes of incarceration?
One of the things I didn't know as I was working on this project is that you asked me something I learned. I had no idea the significance of portraiture until I started talking with imprisoned and formerly imprisoned people. And it's enormous. It's probably the most common form of art making in prison. We have lots of portraits on display. I heard that you were able to see the show, so thank you, including like Mark Laffney's series of over 600 portraits of currently imprisoned people. He's imprisoned in Pennsylvania, and he's been doing this series called Pyrrhic Defeat, where he asks other imprisoned people to sit for him for 20 minutes, and he makes these remarkable sketches. For him, it's really important that all 651 works that are in the show be seen as one work, because he's trying to document the toll of mass incarceration from the place of a person held captive. We also have this work by Tamika Cole, who's currently based in Alabama, and it's a graphite collage that's been reprinted a lot in terms of the marketing of the show. It's a beautiful piece called Locked in a Dark Calm. She created that piece as a response to some abuse that she was experiencing in prison. And she said anything she'd do to protest that abuse would have just lengthened her sentence or led her to be put in the hole. So through art, she was able to actually cultivate the space for her own survival. Portrait work is so important to imprisoned people because it's a way that they take control of their own representation. The representation of imprisoned people is so it's so spectacular in terms of like how horrifying and isolating it is from a broader public culture. It's demeaning, it's demoralizing images like mugshots and prison ID photos. So the portrait work of imprisoned people is quite radical in shifting the power dynamics of who's looking, who's representing. You know, to actually be someone in a 6-foot by 9-foot cell and to be creating and planning and imagining representation of other people in prison that they can then send home to their loved ones, that they can use to replace like the kind of stigmatized images that the state uses to mark them as a bad person, is like, it's also for many people part of like the healing work that they're doing as condemned and punished people, you know, to be able to see themselves in another likeness.
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up photography, because that was my next question was, you know, it's one, not an option for artists who are incarcerated. But you did include photography as part of the exhibit. Can you explain to me why you wanted to do that? And what are some of the images that we see and why were they chosen?
Yeah. The show, even though I probably about 3/4 of the artists in the show are formerly or currently imprisoned people, and then another quarter are people like Sable Ely Smith, Maria Gaspar, Chandra McCormick, and Keith Calhoun, Sarah Bennett. These are Ashley Hunt. These are all artists who Roe and Renee, who are deeply, deeply concerned about the expanse of the prison state. They're deeply concerned about criminalization of poor people, queer people, non-white people, and they've been making art about these issues for many, many years. The show for me and for like the team of curators who work with me on it and the incredible staff at PS1 was really about not having these works exist in silos in separate places or like as binaries, but actually having them in conversation. So it's so important that like Sable Ely Smith, who's like an incredible conceptual artist and professor at Columbia, her work is in the same room as Daniel McCarthy Clifford, who was actually in prison. And they're doing very similar things where they're working with the architecture and materials that come out of prison and turning them into interesting sculptures. So in order for us to take the work seriously of imprisoned people, we have to see that work in conversation with contemporary practices that we recognize and that we have already placed that kind of value on. And so for me, if there's any intervention that I want to make in terms of the museum, is to change how our value systems in terms of what we consider art, what gets displayed on the quote white walls or on the floors of a museum. And politically, for me, the stakes are really high that this project is a part of a larger movement to end prisons.
It's really the exhibit is great on a couple of levels. One is because of social distancing, there's space to see things because there's only a few people allow it in at a time. And then it's also, I found it, there's so much texture to it from, you know, Jesse Crimes' piece, which is, you know, set out in this room, it's almost like the Monet's water lilies, the way it wraps around, to the amazing sculpture made out of trays, out of the trays from cafeterias.
Right. That was Daniel McCarthy Clifford, who's in the room with Sable that I mentioned. Right.
Yeah.
And to have those works in conversation, like I had dreamt of having those works in conversation for a couple of years in the same space. And I've told each about their, I was like, Sable, you should see the work of Daniel. Daniel, you should see the work of Sable. You know, these are two people who are like very disparately positioned in terms of their relationships to prison. And they're incredibly inspired by each other's works. And this is something about like, for me, having the book turn into an exhibition, like I am experiencing the work completely anew, because you know the book is organized in a linear way. Even if I'm not writing in a linear way, the kind of way people tend to read is that way. And I feel like that show just it brings a whole nother level of significance to the actual stakes of making art when you are held in captivity, to make art when you are told that you're a bad person and that you have no role in society, to make art when you have been, your voting rights have been stripped away from you and where you can't see your children or your loved ones. And, you know, so like for me, it really heightens those stakes. And I'm learning every time I go in and see the work, I'm learning something new, even though I've been studying this for 10 years.
Do any of the artists you spoke with who are now no longer incarcerated hope that being incarcerated just becomes part of their bio rather than being referred to as an formerly incarcerated artist? Is there a tension there?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And so Kate Fowle, who's the director of PS1, said, you know, if this show accomplishes what it should accomplish, then artists like James Hoff and Jared Owens and Tamika Coles and Mary Baxter should be able to make whatever kind of art they want to make and use whatever labels they want to use to describe themselves as artists, as conceptual artists or painters or portrait artists, and that I, Nicole Fleetwood, should not be doing more shows on mass incarceration if this accomplishes what we want it to accomplish, which means expanding cultural institutions, like not just expanding them, but transforming them so that we recognize culture being made in all kinds of sites. And we also expand the audience, transform the audience and the role of museums, right? That museums are not about excluding certain groups of people. They're not about collecting certain things and devaluing other things, but that they're really part of like sites of belonging and creation and coming together. And I feel like even though we're doing social distancing in the museum, that I'm seeing people, the work resonate with people, and like viewers look across the room at each other because something's happening in that space for them.
It's true.
That shared space.
The name of the book is Marking Time, Art in the Age of Mass Incarceration. It's also the name of the show at MoMA PS1. Nicole, thank you so much for being with us on All of It.
Thank you so much.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.